Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. As always, up to speed with Formula One. It is Thursday, February 29th, 2024. My name is Mark Daly, sitting here in the studio at about 11 p.m. Pacific time. So the weekend's, it's almost here. By the time I finish recording, it'll be probably well after midnight. And then to me, Friday is officially weekend, even though it's a work day. It's all good. I don't really mind whatsoever. But what's kind of cool, by the time that you download the show and listen to it, perhaps practice will be over. It looks like where I'm sitting right now, we're about 5.5 hours out from FP3, which will make it about 4:30 a.m. Pacific time. And I get up early enough to go to work, so I'm not going to be getting up any earlier. I'll check it out in the morning when I sit there and doom scroll through my timeline on X and Instagram and all that good sort of stuff. Anyways, exciting that Formula One is back, and I hope this is a nice little supplement to the rest of your race weekend, what with qualifying and the race on Saturday. A little bit of a staggered format compared to usual. I mean, usually we get the race on Sundays, of course, but I'm excited. I'm ready to go. I don't want to sit around any longer. The off season has been going on long enough, and it's going to be a packed calendar, folks. I mean, we got the race this weekend. Next weekend, we're off to Saudi Arabia, back to Jeddah, then Australia, Japan, China. Be back stateside beginning of May for the Miami Grand Prix. We're going to just roll all the way through until the final race of the year on, December 8th in Abu Dhabi at the well-known, the world-renowned Yas Marina Circuit. So really looking forward to doing that and covering another season, which will be the ninth in the catalog of this show, and can't wait to get it all started again. Got a good show coming up today. We're going to talk about the Christian Horner stuff. We have to do that, but we're going to spend a lot of time. I sat down earlier today with Marshall the Marshall, and we're going to talk all about what it takes to become a race marshal and some of the cool things that he's done in 20 plus years as a race marshal, from everything from local club racing to IndyCars, Formula One. And it was really cool to sit down with Marshall earlier today and talk about all of that and his interesting career track side. Before we get into that, just want to give a shout out to The Race Weekend. You can check them out at theraceweekend.com. That's RACEWKND. And if you decide to get a year subscription, enter in my promo code ScuderiaPod at checkout. That's ScuderiaPod, and you will receive a 10% discount on your subscription. And check out racingexclusives.com for one-of-a-kind Formula One memorabilia that comes with a certificate of authenticity. That's racingexclusives.com. And guys, this is also very important. Season's just about ready to go. You got to lock in your fantasy team. So go to the F1 fantasy site, as horrible as and user unfriendly as it is. Search up Scuderia F1 podcast, and you can join in there, or you can also use the code CR. Messed that up already. C8ROQZQ0Y10. Once again, the code for our podcast fantasy league, C8ROQZQ0Y10. If I said that way too fast, and I probably did, just to head on over to X, I've got that posted a couple of times. I think it might be posted or pinned to the top of my profile, so check it out there. Okay, so I do want to kind of move through this next bit as quickly as possible. I want to get to the interview with Marshall and talk about that, but we do have to talk about the Christian Horner investigation, of course, being here on the wrong side of the world, figuratively speaking, when it comes to to the Formula One news cycle. This is, you know, well and truly old news now. I mean, it broke for me earlier this morning, which was about 18 hours ago. So certainly by the time most of you get up in the morning, it will be a day old. But anyways, it's very important to talk about anyways. But Red Bull has released the results, or not the results, but the outcome of the investigation involving Christian Horner and the allegations against him. So that has been dismissed by the team. They've decided to move on from that. They haven't made any public statement about that, other than just a brief statement. Christian Horner himself also released a statement saying, quote, "I will comment on anonymous speculation, but to reiterate, I have always denied the allegations. I respected the integrity of the independent investigation and fully cooperated with it every single step of the way. It was a thorough and fair investigation conducted by an independent specialist barrister, and it has concluded dismissing the complaint made. I remain fully focused on the start of the season," end quote. So Red Bull, they also released a statement, and they said, quote, "The independent investigation into the allegations made against Mr. Horner is complete, and Red Bull can confirm that the grievance has been dismissed. The complainant has a right of appeal. Red Bull is confident that the investigation has been fair, rigorous, and impartial. The investigation report is confidential and contains the private information of the parties and third parties who assisted in the investigation, and therefore we will not be commenting further out of respect for all concerned. Red Bull will continue striving to meet the highest workplace standards," end quote. So that's what they've publicly said. After this is the story broke, there was a leak of the alleged messages, and that was spread out to over 100 people, including senior figures within Formula One, the FIA, team principals, and permanently accredited media. Jos Verstappen, who is Max's dad, was also one of the people to receive that. Anyways, there was a couple of quotes here. Oh, here it is in it's in my notes here, just going back on the statement issued by Christian Horner. But yeah, so this is quite interesting, and you know, I don't want to, you know, I mean, I can't really speculate because I don't really know, but I mean, this leak, nobody really knows where it comes from. Nobody can really prove, at least, you know, as far as we know, the I guess you could say the authenticity, the origin of these messages, but you know, the timing is all very strange. And don't you all get the feeling that this is far from over? I don't think it's settled as all at all. And Toto Wolff, team principal of Mercedes, had a couple of things today, as well as Zach Brown, CEO of McLaren. Toto had to say, quote, "Well, I just read the statement, which was pretty basic. My personal opinion is that we can't really look behind the curtain. At the end of the day, there's a lady in an organization that has spoken to HR and has said that there's an issue and it was investigated. And yesterday, the sport has received the message. It's all fine. We've looked at it. I believe that with the aspiration as a global sport on such critical topics, it needs to be more transparent. And I wonder what the sport's position is. We are competitors. We are a team, and we can have our own personal opinions or not. But it's more like a general reaction or an action that we as a sport need to assess what is right in that situation and what is wrong," end quote. So anyways, Zach Brown also chimed in. He had the following to say, quote, "I've read this statement. I think from what I've seen, there continues to be a lot of rumors, speculation, and questions. I think the sanctioning body has a responsibility and authority to our sport, to our fans, and I think to all of us in Formula One. I think that they need to make sure that things have been fully transparent with them. I think until then, there will continue to be speculation because there is a lot of unanswered questions about the whole process. I think that's what's needed by those who run the sport, is to really be able to draw a line under it. Until then, I think there will continue to be some level of speculation by people, and I don't think that is healthy for the sport," end quote. So I absolutely agree with that. You know, these the leaked messages, and you know, they're very graphic, and you know, sexting and things like that, allegedly. That's what's been reported in some of the UK newspapers I was looking at. Anyhow, I hope, like Zach Brown says, and also like Toto, that this can be fully, well, as transparent as it can be without divulging personal information of the people involved, or at least whatever transparency is in this case. And of course, when you only know very limited information, I don't know where the line is as to what is enough, what is not enough. But like Zach Brown says, I want to see a line drawn under this too, and so we can all feel satisfied as to whether or not this was handled properly and the case actually is closed. Because I mean, the last thing that we want is that there's some sort of cover up, that there's some injustice, and somebody's been taken advantage of. We don't want that at all, and it could be a bit of a defining moment in the sport. So I certainly hope that they've done their bit to do the best job that they can. Anyhow, I'm just going to step aside right now. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. I've got Marshall the Marshal on deck here, and we're going to talk all about what happens trackside at a race of any kind, not just a Formula One race, what it takes to get into marshalling, and some of his aspirations for the future. We'll talk about that on the flip side, so please don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the show. Joining me now is Marshall the Marshal, or as many of you know him on social media as Double Waved Yellow. And Marshall has been a racing fan since the age of 5 and became a race marshal back in 2003. He recently passed 365 event days, which means he has now spent more than an entire calendar year of his life flagging at races at over a dozen different tracks. Marshall currently serves as the membership director of the Canadian Race Communications Association, which is his local club, and is very busy trying to recruit the next generation of motorsport volunteers. Marshall is a great follow on social media, so give him a follow on X or Threads at Double Waved Yellow, DBL Waved Yellow. Marshall the Marshal, welcome to the show.
Good. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing really good. Well, this is fun. I've been looking forward to doing this. We've been talking about it for a couple of weeks, but we've been chatting back and forth on social media for a very, very long time, and it's cool to get your perspective on a lot of things that we see happen on the track. But we wanted to dive into it a little bit deeper, because I'm just going to throw this statement at you. It's of course a question, depending how you want to look at it. But let's put it this way. Motorsport in all its forms is inherently dangerous and chaotic. Rules and structures help bring order and mitigate some of the dangers and the chaos in motorsport. Do you agree or disagree?
Oh, absolutely. I think having those rules and procedures and people around doing all the different roles that they do on a race weekend is essential for making it go off safely. And, without volunteers, you can't have a motor race.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's back it up, because we'll pick this up in a little bit here. So you've been a race fan since the age of 5, and you've been now marshalling for over 20 years. As I just mentioned, your bio, you've spent a full calendar year out of your entire life trackside, which is phenomenal. So let's start at the beginning. How did you get into motorsports?
So my entire family are all kind of racing nuts. My uncles and my dad. My dad actually raced as an amateur racer when I was really little, with an old Datsun that he built himself. So,
oh, cool.
You know, I kind of grew up following it. My dad was a big Prost fan, so of course I had to be a Senna fan. Just
of because. Course.
And you know, I think the earliest memory I have of actually sitting down and watching a race is San Marino 89. So
really cool.
That's,
cool.
Yeah, that was the one where Senna beat Prost and Prost went off trying to catch him. It was also the one where Gerhard Berger had his big fireball. So that was
oh my goodness. Yeah.
That was a memorable race that I remember just as a young kid. But I was always fascinated with Formula One. Right from like my parents subscribed to Formula Magazine. I don't know if you remember that from way back.
I do. Yeah, absolutely.
So it was like you would get like the race summaries like 2 months after they happened. You know, there was no internet back then. You would get the race summary like well after it happened. But I remember the first issue of the season was always their season preview. And they'd always have all the teams and drivers that were going to be racing that year. And then they would have a section about all the tracks. And then they would have a page about all the flags. And I know that I wore that page out. And even from like a young age, I remember watching the races and watching the flags, watching what they do, trying to see what's going on, like, you know, what the blue flaggers doing, what the yellow flaggers doing, what the marshals are doing in the recovery, like. Just from a young age, I knew that I wanted to do it. And, you know, I'm just going to address the nominative determinism here a little bit. I think that the fact that they were called marshals is probably an influence on me when I was really young, that I just felt like maybe it was a calling. I don't know. I always wanted to do it. And my uncle was actually a marshal when he was very young. He actually marshaled the 1974 Canadian Grand Prix at Mosport.
Oh, very cool.
So he had lots of stories about it and, you know, piqued my interest. It was a lot different when he was young, I'll tell you that. Like, the standards back in the 70s. And, I mean, the danger of it, because he said that, you know, fully one-third of the drivers that started that race, you know, ended up not living either due to plane crashes or car crashes. So it was a dangerous time.
Well, it's crazy, right? I've got a picture just over my shoulder here of Stirling Moss, and it's after a race, and he's the goggles off, and he's got like the, you know, the eyes are still white and the rest of the face covered in oil. And it's just amazing to think back in the day, like how unprotected the drivers were, because there weren't even seat belts, and, you know, the cars literally were just, you know, sheet metal over a frame and a chassis. It's unreal. But it's funny. I mean, your exposure to motorsport at a young age is very similar to the way that I grew up, because my dad, coming from the UK, he was a big motor racing fan, and he always spent time at Brands Hatch and Silverstone watching anything that they were racing. And very much like yourself, like, I didn't grow up with a Formula magazine, but what we grew up with in our house was my dad had boxes and boxes of old Autosport magazines. Yep. And I just remember the same thing, just going through them over and over again, looking at all these cool pictures and reading all these stories and everything like that. Also, a fun fact, so where I'm sitting now here, I live in Coquitlam, which is a suburb of Vancouver. Just a mile or two up the road from where I live is the, it's a subdivision now, but it used to be the old Westwood Motorsport Park.
Yep.
So it's really interesting. Like, I looked into it, and you've got a story to share with that one?
Well, right behind me is Gilles Villeneuve. On my wall.
Gilles Villeneuve. That's right.
He raced there in Formula Atlantic.
Yeah. That's right. And it's very cool, because a lot of the streets around there, they have like the heritage is still there. There's Deer Leap Court, there's Moss Court, there's Dunlop Crescent and Paddock Crescent and things like that. Unfortunately, you can't figure where the track used to be, but there's also, I should post it again. There was, you know, Stirling Moss, actually, there's some funny tie in again, with him, but he used to be the ambassador for the circuit. And if you look it up on YouTube, there's like this promo video that he he did sometimes. It must be the late 1960s, and he's doing a lap around the track, and I can just imagine somebody sitting beside him in the car with a camera filming him. He's in there with like a jacket and tie on and just driving like it's just crazy. Anyways, that's really cool. So when did you, like you mentioned, just going through those magazines and just looking through and just learning about all the, what, you know, what a red flag and a blue flag, all the different flags were, and being, you know, captivated and interested by what was happening on the track. So when did it become more serious for you? When did it become just an interest to, hey, this is something I need to do?
So it was when I went with my uncle to the Canadian Grand Prix in 2003. And I went first time because I grew up on the East Coast in very rural area. And I mean, it's not far from Montreal, but it feels like a million miles away from Formula One. Like it feels very disconnected from that world, especially in the days of the 90s when, you know, it wasn't that big a deal. As we're seeing now, the sort of revival and growth in North America, in the US especially, it was a very niche sport, right? Mm-hmm. So I was a huge fan my whole life. And to finally go when I was probably 20, 21, something like that. And I went for the first time. And again, I was just watching the marshals. I was watching them more than I was watching on the track. I was watching what they were doing, the safety vehicles, the response, the whole procedure around how a race works in terms of like the bigger picture. And when we were walking back, we were going on the back straight where that spectator fence, if you've been there, is like along where the back straight is, kind of by the casino.
Yes.
And yep, the yep. marshals were all there having their lunch and under a tree. And I was like, so how do you do this anyway? And they were mostly from Road Atlanta, I remember. And they just, you know, told me all about it and gave me the whole sales pitch of how awesome it was. And they come up from Road Atlanta and work it every year. And so I knew from when my dad raced where our local track was, obviously. So I just said, you know what? I'm going to go do this. Like, I'm going to go back to Shubenacadie, Nova Scotia, and I'm going to do my marshalling there. And I just showed up and said, hey, I want to do this. And my whole goal was to do it in F1 someday. You know, that's not what everybody does. But for mm-hmm. me, it was like, I want to go work an F1 race. So sign me up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it ended up very shortly that, you know, you fall in love with the local scene. You almost enjoy it as much or more, and you enjoy the camaraderie and you enjoy the people you're with. And, you know, eventually you become close friends with all the people that you're there with. And then, you know, after, I guess, 3 or 4 years, I had enough days under my belt, because the way it works is if you want to sign up and you join a club, you would go to the school. And usually the various clubs at your track would have a school day where they train you in the classroom and give you the rule book, all the safety procedures, what you do, what we don't do, you know, the rundown of everything. I'm not going to get into it, but you can imagine that there's a lot of things that you just need ground rules for to operate safely on the side of the track. And then after that, you'd become what we call a QE, I guess, is usually what the terminology is where you'll become like a trainee, basically. And you'll stand on the track side with an experienced marshal who will tell you what he's doing or she's doing and explain and watch you. So they'll, you know, the first day will probably be very casual of like, just, hey, hang out, watch us do our thing. If you have any questions, we're going to explain what we're doing. And then as people get more comfortable, you give them a flag and say, okay, you're going to flag this session. You're going to wave the yellow. You tell me what you should do. Like, you tell me what the rules are and I'll tell you if you're right or whatever. And then, we do like at the end of the day, an evaluation, you know, are you on time? Did you do the, you know, bring all your gear? Did you listen to instructions? 'Cause that's the main thing I have mm-hmm. to say, like, it's the ability to just be there and take instruction at that early phase, to be able to have the focus and dedication needed just to put your phone away, and focus on what's happening on the track. Because I actually had my friend come to a school, I can't remember if it was last year or a couple years ago, and he's like, you know, this is the most boring thing in the world until it's not. Like, it's really like when everything's going fine and there's just bikes or cars going around and zoom, 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 everything seems calm, but you've got to be waiting for that moment of chaos. And when it happens, you've got to be on. So you're looking for people who are not daydreamy. They're very focused. They're watching the cars. They're watching the bikes. They're watching the interactions between them, closing speeds, lines, you know, looking for oil or debris or, you know, track condition, just being observant, basically. And you're just, you give them the evaluation at the end of the day. And then after 15 event days, or, you know, give or take, it could be more, you know, somebody will get, and it's different for every club. Like every club will have its own standards, but for us, it's typically 15 days of, you know, on track observation, like instruction and then observation. And then you get your license, and that license entitles you to work as a marshal at any track. And there's like, you know, beginner, advanced, or beginner, intermediate, and advanced levels based off of the number of events you've worked. And, you know, there's subsequent training. So there's the radio protocol, because when we're on the corner, at least one person will be the communicator on that corner and will have either a radio or a landline system. And they will have to report back everything that happens in that section and every flag status to control, and control relay instructions. And there's a very set protocol on how that all happens. And you have to be trained on that. And then there's also, I know that the club that I came in with was at Mosport, and they do blue flag training. So that's a separate designation for them. But every track kind of has its own rules and quirks and differences, but in general it all kind of follows the same procedure. And then once you get that license, no matter which club you are, it's an FIA affiliated club, so you have an FIA license.
So that's interesting. There's a couple of things I want to sort of dive deeper on now. So once you're qualified, you say you can go and like work anywhere. Is that regional? Is that national? Yes. Is that international? Is it all of the above?
It's all of the above, but of course, Formula One and IndyCar and the like are more selective. Your admission's not guaranteed. You're qualified to work it, but you may not be selected to work it. But if you wanted to go, you know, to BC or to, I don't know, I'm trying to think out west. You guys don't have a lot of tracks out there, actually. It's unfortunate.
The closest one that would, you know, to me would be Mission Raceway, right, which would be about like 40, 45 minutes away from where I am right Mission. Now.
Yeah. And, you know, if I wanted to go and, you know, do a race there, my license from Ontario is perfectly good to just show up and say, hey, I want to work, guys. And I'm sure they'd be happy to have you, you know, we have a lot of, like, I work the Toronto Indy here and every year, and we have marshals that come up from all over the US. We have marshals who come from all over the world to work Formula One. And, you know, it's a vast collection of different people from all over that like to travel around and go to these events. And, you know, it's all predicated on that local level training, that local level license that allows you to work an FIA event anywhere.
That's amazing. So I know you're saying that it started for you at your local club, and you're saying that, you know, that there's certain like attributes that, you know, that you need to be a marshal to do it. Is there anything when somebody shows up, is there anything that, you know, is there any kind of screening process that, you know, when, you know, kind of going through, I guess, maybe an onboarding interview or something like that? Or are there any qualities that, well, I guess it wouldn't be qualities, anything that might show up with a person that might rule them out as being anything less than a good candidate to become a race official or a marshal, I should say?
I think that you give everyone an opportunity. It's a volunteer organization, but we're in the safety business here. You know, you can't.
Yeah.
you're there to do a job. And if you're not doing that job, then someone's going to have a very frank discussion that maybe this is not for you. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to say that that's never really been a concern, because usually the people who aren't good at it or don't show an aptitude are not interested, you know?
Okay.
There's a certain hurdle of like I think a lot of times maybe you're super interested and you want to get your friend into it and they're just not totally jazzed by it, but they, you know, or, you know, significant other or something. And sometimes it's great because, you know, couples love working the races together, but other times, you know, one person loves it and the other person, it's not for them. And, you know, it becomes pretty apparent pretty quickly if it's not something you have a passion for. Because you really have to love racing a lot in order to do this. You really, you know, I mean, at my home track now, I'm based out of Shannonville Motorsport Park for the most part, which is in Eastern Ontario. And we have mostly motorcycles racing there. And like, you've really got to commit because it's a 2-hour drive from Toronto just to get there. And it's cottage traffic coming back. And you know, it's very, very big commitment. And I think that if people aren't loving it, or, you know, it doesn't become something that they want to get through that 15 days, then they're going to self-select out usually. But we want to encourage people to play to their strengths too. I think one of the great things that we do is that we have a lot of folks that, you know, if they need accommodations and things, we can accommodate them within, you know, a reasonable ability of, you know, what they're able to do, whether that's a health issue or just like, I prefer not to do this, or I'm intimidated by the radio or whatever. Like, if people have something that is not their favorite thing, we're not going to say, okay, well, you can't come anymore. We're going to say, okay, well, we're going to let you do what you're comfortable doing. And I think that it's important to meet people where they are. And I think what I wanted to get into and what I will get into is how things have changed for us in the last sort of, I think, you know, 15 to 20 years in terms of the numbers that we have. And, you know, it's a struggle. It's a struggle because it's a lot to ask of people. And everybody wants to work Formula One like me. Like, how I started was I wanted to do the F1 race. That was what I wanted to do more than anything else in the world. But then once you start to get loving the local stuff, and you start to love the other forms of racing, the motorbikes, the regional cars, the vintage cars, I love vintage cars. And you start to, you know, you're actually missing more Formula One races on TV than you're seeing, because you're always at the track, you know, working something. But it's that passion that keeps you coming back, and that, you know, you came for Formula One, but you're going to keep coming. But I'm not going to lie, there's a lot of folks that, you know, just want to do Formula One, and they're not going to stick around for the regional stuff. They're not going to be as enthralled by motorcycles. Like, I have a lot of people that I work with at car events that just say, nope, motorbikes aren't for me. You seen how far those things fly? No way. You know, I'm not, like, you know, there's just, people have different preferences and different things that they're interested in, and you can't, it's volunteer, right? And that's the challenge. As people, age and, move on from the hobby, you know, we need younger people coming in that are going to do this. And it's really hard to get people to commit. And I think that we do have some renewal issues at the grassroots level. Part of the reason that I wanted to talk to you today is because I think that if more people knew about these opportunities and the fun that it is, and that you can be involved in this way, then maybe people will want to come out and give it a try. Even if it's not for you, there are a ton of different volunteer roles at the racetrack. There's timing and scoring, there's scrutineering. Like, a lot of these people I see on Twitter that have all this engineering knowledge, and they're talking about like the minutia of all these things. I'm like, why aren't you a scrutineer? Why aren't you at the track with us, you know, running scrutineering for the local racers, right? Why aren't you out there, you know, with us? And I think that, being an official, being a steward, you know, working any number of roles at the track, there's something there for everyone. And like I say, you know, not everything's Formula One. These weekend racers, they need our help. There's no money in regional racing. There's no money in much racing besides Formula One these days. I think my friend back home used to say money is the fine art of racing is the fine art of turning money into noise. So
that sounds about right, actually.
Yeah. But or how do you make $1 million in racing? Start with $10 million, right?
So it's the same result, you know. It's just it's like law of diminishing returns, right? But it sounds fast, it looks good, and it makes a lot of noise, right?
But I think that a lot of people make that mistake of, well, it's not a mistake. I mean, I think it's true that, you know, Formula One is this big global sport and it relies on volunteer labor. And, you know, they're making billions of dollars at Liberty and we're there on our own dime, right? But that ignores the fact that that is our vacation. That is our reward for a season of doing the local stuff for nothing, you know, out of the love of the sport, keeping the sport going. And if you paid marshals to do Formula One, it would only make the grassroots struggle more because you'd end up with people that don't have that hook, that don't have the ability to go down and work at, you know, an IMSA race in Sebring or, you know, do the Indy in Toronto or something. You know, like these hooks are what keep us going back to the track every weekend and having these, you know, big events with our friends and our colleagues that we work with all year and making a big trip out of it in March or June, right? So I think that a lot of times people have easy solutions, but it doesn't offer the same solution at the grassroots level where there's, you know, if you said marshals had to be paid, well, where's that money going to be coming from?
Yeah, who's going to pay it? Where's it going to come from? Like, yeah, it's just
going to mean, it's just going to mean higher entry fees that are already, you know, pushing things and, you know, race. It's just going to get passed down to the racers and it's going to mean lower car counts and it's going to mean, you know, harder to get people to come race at the tracks. Right. So, none of these guys are getting rich, right?
No, it's like everything else. It's like if it's big and glamorous, you know, there's a very, very small percentage of people at the very top of the pyramid that that they're making all the big bucks. And there's a lot of folks, you know, down at the grassroots. But so let me just sort of recap here. So once you go in, you do your 15 days plus or minus, you get qualified. That is basically your foot in the door. And that's where you can start to specialize. If there's one other area, like you're saying, marshaling, scrutineering, you know, the radio stuff, flagging, whatever it is, once you get that basic qualification in, I guess it would to be, I suppose to a certain extent, would also be availability at wherever the club you're working at too, depending on the, they might have need a certain need for more people in one role than another. So,
absolutely. You know,
I guess that, yeah. Okay. Well, that's awesome.
What we always struggle for is like, we need a starter. Anybody want to be the starter? You know,
That was going to be my next question. Like, what are the most popular like jobs that you can do? Like what is the one thing that everybody wants to do?
I love blue flagging. I love it.
Don't you get frustrated? Like if you're the one out there waving the blue flag and there's that one car that isn't doing what you're supposed to do when you get the blue flag is let the faster car by. I mean, as a fan, you know, that drives me crazy. It's like, what, you know, what's going on here? So you got to move over, let the car behind you. How you can say so like neutral. I
mean, you would have hated the 80s, man. They did not get out bad? Of the way. Like, oh, the blue flag was merely a suggestion back then.
Right.
and actually, if you watch IndyCar, if you're on the lead lap and the leader's coming up to pass you on a road course, they don't need to get out of the way. They can hold up the leader all they want if they're the last car on the lead lap. So,
interesting? Yeah.
It's a little bit different. Like they can fight like hell to stay on that lead lap. The race control is not going to force them to get out of the way if they're that last car on the lead lap. which is different. Like every series has a different interpretation. I love working IMSA because you have multi-class racing. So you have, you know, sports cars, you got the big prototypes coming up behind the GT cars and, you know, the closing speed is insane and I you're bet. Just, your arm is going to fall off. You're just constantly waving that flag and it's exhilarating. And, I remember like, my first F1 race as a marshal was in 2006. And, I gave Michael Schumacher a blue flag when he was he was on an in-lap during qualifying. And I'm like, I just blue flagged Michael Schumacher.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. Yeah, like, that's great. That is so cool.
Yeah. It's like, and I remember like these guys are really good because, you know, sometimes, in lower levels of racing, they can kind of, you really have to be big with the flags, right? Like, mm-hmm. Sometimes we'll give a black flag and honestly, like 3 or 4 laps, they won't see it because they got the tunnel vision going.
Sure.
And like, you know, this is amateur racing. They got the red mist and the tunnel vision going and they don't see your flag. They're not watching for it. So we're trying to make ourselves big and whatever. And, I remember like back in the days before we had those blinky light boards in Formula One, you know, we had to put out the safety car board. And like Alonso was in the lead and I didn't even have like the board halfway out and Alonso backed off and raised his hand at us. And it's like, oh, these guys are good.
Yeah. No kidding. Like, right. That's amazing.
Like they're very, like that they see everything where, you know, there's a difference between the amateur racing. And I would actually say that that's a big reason that the amateur racing is a lot more interesting sometimes is because we are doing it all ourselves. When you have like 4 to 6 marshals per corner and everybody's just doing one job, it's a lot more relaxed, sure, but perhaps a bit less interesting than having 1 or 2 people per corner like we do in the local regional stuff. So, yeah.
I've got a question for you now. Like when you go to the track, is there any sort of like, you know, strategic thought that goes into it, or is it just like, I'll go to whatever corner is, or do you have like, if you go to any track, is there a corner maybe that is maybe more attractive? You just look at the layout, you know that there might be more action somewhere. Are you just good to go wherever you're needed?
This is the thing, is that we just do the job that we're told. So the chief course marshal is responsible for the corner assignments. At bigger pro races, he might delegate that to the captains or the team captains to, you know, you're getting this stretch track, divide your people accordingly. That's kind of how we work it at the Indy in Toronto. But like, if you're just going for a regular race weekend, you know, we've got our chief course marshal and he's got the names on the boards and he's just going to put everybody where we need to go based on the numbers that we have. For a local race, I don't care where I go. Like, you know, there are no bad corners at my track. Like anything can happen anywhere. And I think that's the attitude you have to take. I know that when you travel a long way, you do have to kind of cope with that disappointment of, oh, I was hoping to get I was hoping to get the Wall of Champions, you know, like if I want to go to Montreal, I want to get the Wall of Champions, but it didn't happen. I'm on the back straight, but I've got a job to do. So I watch Roman Grosjean obliterate groundhogs at 300 kilometers an hour. That's still entertaining, right?
For sure. Definitely. Right.
So, you know, I mean, the thing you have to be prepared for is stuff happens everywhere. If you don't believe me, just type in Felipe Nasser, Montreal 2015. And, he was heating up his tires during the qualifying session on the back straight and half spun and crunched it into the backstretch wall by the casino, just totally destroyed his car. So, you know, things can happen at any time, anywhere. And, you know, part of our job is to just be prepared and react to it instantly when it does, because we have to be the ones giving that signal to the following drivers. So you kind of have to treat it like every car that goes through might go off. You know, you have to be thinking of it like, you know, something could happen at any moment in time and you're just waiting for that moment to happen.
I was just thinking about that. You mentioned Felipe Nasr, but talking about things that can happen at any time, and that just reminded me of something I don't think anybody expected to happen was when Robert Kubica had that huge crash at Montreal going into the hairpin. And, yep. and I mean, I don't think anybody expected him to have an accident like that, and just the way that the car disintegrated and basically tumbled all the way down, just past, you know, into the gravel by the entry into the hairpin there. I mean, that was...
I believe that was a car failure, was it not? That
his, I think it was. His wing failed. It wasn't so much something that he did wrong, but you know, like you say, anything can happen anywhere at any time. So I got another question here for you. So you've been doing this for a very, very long time now, and you've done everything from your local club scene all the way up to Formula One. Is like, what's left on the list? Like there's motorsport all over the world. If you could have one assignment like tomorrow, like they called you up and Marshall, we got this for you, you know, like what would that assignment be?
The 24 hours of Le Mans.
Oh yeah, good call. Good call.
That's the one that's still on the bucket list.
Yeah.
I definitely want to do that one.
Yeah.
That's just the holy grail of races, really. That's
yeah. How difficult would that be to get your name into the onto the list for that one?
I mean, I'm sure that you have to put your name in early, but I know many people who have. And I know many people who actually there was one guy from I think he's from Luxembourg that I worked with, Belgium or Luxembourg or somewhere that, he worked with me at Montreal last year, and he had a patch that was, 2424. It's like, what does that mean? He's like 24, 24s.
Wow. That's cool.
Like, whoa.
That is quite the experience. I bet you he's got some stories, eh?
Yeah. He was the best blue flagger I've ever seen.
I can imagine. If you've done 24, you know, trips to Le Mans to do the 24 hours there, that you know your stuff pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But that's definitely the one that I'd like to do.
Cool. Hey, well, as we start to wrap things up here, so like now's your chance to give a pitch. So like, you know, there's, you know, lots of people that be interested to do this. Where can they start to look for information? Where should they go first?
Absolutely. So for your Canadian listeners, it's really track by track. It's unfortunate, but that's kind of how it works up here. So each track will have their marshalling club. So you would have to look for the track that's closest to you and find the marshalling club. So for me, I'm based at Shannonville. Our club is called CRCA, Canadian Race Communications Association. We have another club that I work with, that's, MMS, Motorsport Marshalling Services, and they're out of Mosport, or Canadian Tire Motorsport Park, as it's known now. We're actually having our school, on the 18th of May. That's our initial new Marshall school at Shannonville. At Mosport, their new Marshall school is going to be on May 4th and 5th. That's the first regional car race. Ours is going to be taking place at Shannonville on the 18th for the Canadian Superbike weekend. So, if anybody is in the Ontario region, that's where you can get a hold of us, motorsportmarshalling.on.ca or crcamarshals.ca. That's where you can get a hold of us. If you are in the United States, though, it's quite a lot easier to get involved because it's all organized, at least for cars, through the SCCA. So just go to the SCCA website, the Sports Car Club of America, and just click on the link that says volunteer. And then marshalling will be in the list of volunteer activities, and you just put your address in or your zip code, and it will tell you what region you're a part of based off of where you live. And somebody will reach out to you and tell you, you know, if you don't already know where the closest racetrack, you know, competitive racetrack is to you, they'll tell you pretty quickly where it is and how you can get involved. The system for the SCCA works very similarly to how we do it and how I explained before. If you're in the UK, it's even easier because there's one umbrella organization for all the marshals in the UK. It's a BMC, British Marshalling Club, I believe. And I think it's bmcc.co.uk. I hope I got that right. But if you're in the UK, they have what they have a really cool thing that, they do a trial day. So if you sign up, you can just come out and be on a corner and see how it works. And they basically take you in and show you how to do it. And they have a ton of tracks in the UK and they're all, you know, clustered together in sort of Motorsport Valley and the environs around. So if you live in the UK, it's beautiful, to have so many tracks and I'm extremely jealous of you all, but, you know, it's a little bit easier, but it's also a heck of a lot more popular, in the UK than here. If you're in Australia, I'm just trying to hit all the English speaking folks. It used to be called CAMS, but I believe it's called Motorsport Australia now. And there's a volunteer section on their website that you can check out. I'm sorry if you live in a country that I haven't mentioned, but just type in marshalling in your country and I'm sure you'll find out all about it and how you can get involved. And, we'd be super happy to have you. We even provide free lunches.
There you go. And if folks want to give you a follow on social media, where can they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm on Threads and X at DBL Waved Yellow, double waved yellow, fittingly. And I usually tweet about, you know, rules and why the stewards aren't idiots that you think they are and things like that. I'm basically not somebody who has like any deep affinity or fandom for a particular team or driver. So I do tend to be like assumed to be, you know, if I'm making a Max fan upset today, they're sure I'm a Lewis fan. And if I'm making a Lewis fan upset today, they're sure I'm a Max fan. But, you know, I think that means that I'm doing a pretty good job of cutting it through the middle and keeping it fair. So
I get a lot of those similar comments here. Yeah. So I know exactly where you're coming from, Marshall.
So it's like, I think that marshalling will be for you if you're somebody that has a passion for the sport and not necessarily, you know, an overwhelming passion for a particular brand of motorsport, just F1. The more flexible and interested you are at anything that moves quickly and, you know, making it safer and, being a part of making sure that everybody goes home, you know, in one piece at the end of the day is really what we're there for. We don't care who wins. We don't care, you know, what the result is. We're there to make sure that everybody goes home safely and that, you know, everything goes as well as it possibly can. And, you know, that's a good weekend for us. That's a victory for us is when everyone goes home safe. So that's, absolutely, that's the important thing.
For sure. Marshall, thank you so much for dropping by. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Mark. And I really, really love the podcast and keep up the great work.
Thank you very much. Okay, everybody, time for a quick break, and we'll be back on the flip side to preview the Bahrain Grand Prix. It's here. Formula One starts this weekend. We'll do that in just a moment, so please don't go away. All right, welcome back to the show, and thank you again to Marshall the Marshall for coming on to the show, and that was a really enjoyable conversation, and I think Marshall's going to be my new go-to guy for any of those sorts of questions. We've already been talking about other things that we didn't even get a chance to touch on when we connected earlier on Thursday, so certainly we'll be doing that again very, very soon. You know, I feel like I should have like a hotline here that if something comes up in the middle of a show, I can just get Marshall on the line, get him right in, but that would really be fair expecting him to be on standby all the time. Anyways, let's talk about the about the Bahrain Grand Prix. Yes, it's absolutely happening. It is the first race of the year. We had first couple of practice sessions this afternoon, earlier today on Thursday. Danny Ricciardo in the V-Carb, or whatever they're calling it now, 23 laps. His fastest time was 132.689. Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri, the two McLarens, they were second fastest. Danny Ricciardo was only 0.03 of a second slower than Ricciardo's fastest time, and he set a 132.901. Lando was a quarter second behind at 133.113. We had Yuki Tsunoda in the second V-Carb, fourth fastest. Fernando Alonso was fifth fastest in the AMR 24. Max Verstappen, the world champion, the reigning triple world champion, I should say, was sixth fastest, 0.369 seconds behind, with 133.238. George Russell, seventh fastest. Charles Leclerc, eighth fastest. Lewis Hamilton, ninth fastest. And Valtteri Bottas, 10th fastest. So there you go. Those are free practice time. So we'll wait and see what happens later today on Friday. And of course, in qualifying. And then, of course, the big litmus test. First race of the year going just on, well, not too many hours away from now on Saturday. So Oscar Piastri said he is wary of some, you know, some hidden potential, some hidden speed, and feels that that the Red Bulls have been sandbagging right now in Bahrain. Anyways, he was talking to F1.com. He had the following to say, quote, "Red Bull don't look quite as quick as we thought. We'll see how many sandbags come off tomorrow. It's a lot closer than I expected. Mercedes look quick. Fernando look quick. It's always a bit hard to judge on a Friday, but I think we're sorts of around the points. With the teams we're around, being near the podium or near 10th is very much a possibility. So hopefully we can stay near the front of that mix. I think we're in a decent place, still a little bit inconsistent and up and down. So it's hard to know exactly how we will fare, but it looks to be a similar story for everyone. There's some runs we need to look at more detail as to why they were how they were, both good and bad. But I think the overall feeling of the day is pretty positive. It feels a bit pathetic blaming the wind on stuff, but it's difficult out there when it's so windy. These cars have such a different balance and such a different amount of downforce depending on what the wind is doing." So Oscar Piastri obviously sounding a little bit guarded running up to the Bahrain Grand Prix, going into the final practice sessions and then into qualifying the race itself. And we'll wait and see. I mean, it was interesting listening to some of the drivers' comments over the last couple of days, especially end of last week when we finished the three-day test session. And just the comments where they make, and you know, really feeling somewhat cautious, and Piastri certainly carrying those sentiments over into the free practice sessions that we've seen so far. And then I think once we get into qualifying, when we see these cars, I don't know if we'll see them completely unleashed, but certainly it'll be a bit more of a benchmark when we're seeing them going up against each other head to head for the very first time. Whether the speculation and estimations and guesses that we've all been making, just based on what we've seen in practice and in testing, actually comes to bear. Is Red Bull still going to be the quickest car? Is it Ferrari? Is it Ferrari quicker than anyone else? Mercedes? Whatever the case may be. Certainly I'm going to have a little bit of a difficult time betting against Red Bull at the moment, because, well, I mean, we haven't had a real reason to bet against them for some time. I mean, we only saw one other team beat them last year in 2023, and that was Carlos Sainz winning for Ferrari at the Singapore Grand Prix towards the end of last season. And that's not to say that they're going to run away with it and win every single race this season. I certainly hope that they don't. I mean, ultimately, I don't really mind if Red Bull win the Constructors and the Drivers' Championships again. I just want to see them have a little bit more of a lot more of a run of for their money over the course of this 24 race season, right? We don't want to see Max running away and beating everybody by, you know, a mile, right? We want to see him fighting whoever it might be. And yeah, I that could go for any other of the 19 drivers, any of the other 9 teams that whoever wins, I want to see them win fair and I want to see them put up a good fight for it. And I'd like to see a lot of, back and forth. I mean, I know that obviously the end of the 2021 season was not the way that it should have been. But I mean, up until then, I mean, it was great competition between Max and Lewis Hamilton that year. I mean, for me, it doesn't necessarily have to be Max and Lewis fighting it out again this year, but I would really like to see some stern competition and a good scrap, a good fight between a couple of drivers or several drivers, which would be ideal. I mean, I think that's what they would love to see, Formula One. That would be in terms of a spectacle. There's a number of drivers winning races and a number of drivers in the conversation for the Drivers' Championship, but sometimes we don't get what we want. Like I say, I mean, I don't begrudge Max for winning. I don't begrudge Red Bull for winning because it's not an easy thing to do. And I said the same thing during the Mercedes years that until somebody can beat them and beat them on a regular basis, it's difficult to bet against them. I mean, it's just unwise to bet against them. I'm the first person to admit that I'm not the best when it comes to laying bets on sports. Not so that I'm saying that you should, but every time even if it's a sort of a friendly wager, I always, when the rubber hits the road, pun intended, when it comes to motor racing, I could never make a prediction that is actually anything, you know, accurate. You know, it seems I'm always wildly off base, but there's this sort of the toss away, throwaway comments that I make when sort of asked spur of the moment. Those always seem to be the good ones. So maybe that's the way to ask me if you're looking for some information. Try and catch me in the hallway or in the grocery store and like, oh, by the way, what do you think about the Bahrain Grand Prix this weekend? Those seem to be the ones that actually bear a little bit of fruit. Anyways, Mercedes have stated that they're not going to get carried away or overconfident by their pace that they've been setting at the during practice. George Russell said, quote, "We're not getting carried away with ourselves. The qualifying pace looked really strong. We still need to understand why it was so good. We made some changes from the test and it exceeded expectations, but ultimately in the long run, the pace is where it all happens and Max is still ahead of us. It was very close with Fernando, Lando, and the Ferraris. Lewis and I were very similar as well, so we will have a real fight on our hands. In real race pace, we're very pleased with the day. The car is performing really well, but we're not going to get carried away with the timesheets just yet," end quote. And certainly that's a fairly positive statement. I think that we've become used to Mercedes and the organization, not just the drivers, Lewis and George, but we've heard it from Toto, we've heard it from James Allison, etc., that the car hasn't been the greatest, and we saw the W13 and the W14, and even though they pivoted through the season last year, they never really were able to uncork any real threatening speed in terms of catching up and beating the Red Bulls. But I mean, they certainly got a little bit better once they pivoted and moved away from that concept that they carried on with or carried over from the W13 into last year's W14 car, and now they've got a completely new one this year. So is this the year that Mercedes turn it back around and start doing what they've done for so very long and dominate Formula One? And again, I don't need to see somebody dominate Formula One. It doesn't need to be Mercedes or Lewis Hamilton or Red Bull and Max Verstappen or whoever it might be. I just want to see some competition on a more regular basis. And if the same people win at the end of the day after a fair fight, then I guess that's just the way it is. But that doesn't mean I don't want to see Lewis or Max or Charles or whoever it might be. Lando, let's throw Lando in there. He's due for a win. Let's make that prediction right now while I kind of ramble off topic here. But let's see Lando Norris get a win this year. But yeah, I want to see multiple people fighting for race wins and championships this year. That really would be the dream situation. So going into the qualifying today, let's just take a quick look at what we saw last year. So in qualifying last year, we had where do I have it in my notes here? Just a moment, I'll pull it up. Yes, here we go. So Max Verstappen was on pole position. his times increased quite a bit, so the session certainly ramped up. His fastest time, well, his fastest time in Q1 was 131.295. By the time he threw down the fastest lap in Q3, he had brought that down to a 129.708, and himself and his teammate Sergio Perez were the only two drivers under the 130 mark. They were both in the high 129s. Max at 129.708, Sergio 129.846, pardon me. Then you had Charles Leclerc, who was third last year at the start of the race. He set a 130 even, like right on the mark. And again, just very, very close, within a tenth and a half faster of his teammate Carlos Sainz. Then last year, rounding out the top 10, we had Fernando Alonso, George Russell, Lewis Hamilton, Lance Stroll, Esteban Ocon, and then we had Nico Hülkenberg in the Haas squeaking into row 5. So some stats on the Bahrain International Circuit. So it is 308.24 kilometers race length. It is 195.53 miles, 57 laps. The circuit length is 5.41 kilometers or 3.36 miles. Lewis Hamilton has won there the most. He has 5 all-time victories. Ferrari has the most wins as a constructor since we started racing there exactly 20 years ago. They have 7 wins there. And let's just take a look at the circuit itself. So we have 15 corners. This is an interesting track that kind of like winds back in on itself. It's roughly a U-shaped circuit. You have a fairly long start-finish straight. Then you go into a very interesting combinations, a very sharp right and then a left and then a flick back to the right as you go through turns 1, 2, and 3. And just after turn 3 is that little barrier where Romain Grosjean had that huge crash and erupted into a ball of fire several years ago. If you want to see more about that, go and check out the episode on Drive to Survive from 2 years ago. I guess that would be season 4 now. And look for the episode, I believe it's called Man on Fire. Quite shocking. Anyways, after you get from turn 3 down into turn 4, nice sharp turn there, and then you have another series of meandering turns through turns 5, 6, 7, a sharp one, and turn 8. Then you go into the combo of 9 and 10, which are very sharp, and the turn 10 is about 120 degree turn to the left, and then you go into that combo of turns, which I quite like. It turns 11 through 13, and then from 13 you go all the way down the back straight into turn 14, and then you bring it down to turns 14 and 15, and then back into the start finish straight. So you know, when they're hitting the start line, they're doing about 315 kilometers an hour in eighth gear. That's just a whisker under 200 miles an hour. And then come down into turn 1, which is a second gear corner, breaking roughly about 120 meters into the entry of, or from the entry of that corner. That's a second gear corner. So just incredible, you know, going from 200 miles an hour down to 90 miles an hour, or pardon, that's 90 kilometers an hour. So, you know, that's quite a bit. So 315 kilometers down to kilometers an hour down to 90 in second gear. That is just amazing. And then when you go through like that combo of turns at 2 and 3, by the time you hit that that straight there after turn 3, they're already back up to 250 kilometers an hour. So some of the speeds here are quite amazing. And not that there's any comparison between real life racing, obviously, and and gaming, but when it comes to the Formula One video game, this is one of the ones that I enjoy the most. It really does give you a good feel for it, because, you know, sometimes I find that when you experience the, you know, the track, when you play it, you get a bit of a different experience and a different perspective on it. And actually, from a gaming point of view, this is a fun one to play. You have the two DRS zones, you know, start finish straight, and then between turns 10 and 11, sort of about halfway through the lap, and you know, some really interesting corners. So certainly a lot of fun to play that. Let's just take a look at some of the stats here. Where did it go? Okay, so what we have for the tires this weekend, Pirelli are bringing the C1 hard, C2 mediums, and the C3 softs. And let me just pull up the lap record here. The lap record was set, let's see, by Pedro de la Rosa way back in 2005. the lap record, at least during the race, is a 131.447. And let's see if we can pull up the fastest time from last year's race. Can't find it. Oh, here. So, yeah, the fastest lap was set by Zhou Guanyu. His time in 2023 was a 133.996. And compare that to Pedro de la Rosa's record of 131.447. So who knows? That might just be one of those records that is never, ever caught. Anyways, the final race classification last year was an all Red Bull top two steps of the podium. Max Verstappen winning. Sergio Perez was second. Fernando Alonso rounded out the podium P3 for Aston Martin. And then running down the top 10, you had Carlos Sainz for Ferrari, Lewis Hamilton for Mercedes, Lance Stroll, who was recovering from those injuries in his biking accident this time last year. He was sixth. George Russell, Valtteri Bottas, Pierre Gasly, and Alex Albon, the Williams driver, rounded out the top 10 a year ago at the Bahrain Grand Prix. All right, well, I'm going to leave it there. It's going to be a busy weekend. I'm going to be getting up to watch qualifying tomorrow. Well, we'll be watching it during the middle of the day, and they'll be back on Sunday night or Saturday night, whenever it is, to wrap up the race itself, and looking forward to doing that. And just before I go, yeah, I had Marshall on the show earlier. I got some guests lined up over the weeks ahead coming up. If there's anybody you would like to see on the show, by all means, slide into my DMs on X at ScuderiaF1Pod, or send me an email at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com for a suggestion. I will do my earnest to get that person on the show. But let's be realistic. We're not going to get F1 drivers because they're very, very difficult to get a hold of, especially if you're not accredited like myself. So let's be realistic. Don't ask me to try and get Max or Lewis because it's just not going to happen, and people like that. But there are plenty of other fantastic and knowledgeable people in the in this realm, if you want to call it that. And if you've got a suggestion, let me know. Anyways, I'm going to leave it there. Again, a big shout out and thanks to Marshall the Marshall for coming on to the show. If you want to support what I do here, I'd love that, and I would appreciate a lot if you could. And the easiest way to do so is just to leave a rated review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and all that. Give me a follow on X at ScuderiaF1Pod, and if you got something to say, I've also got a post on X where you can phone in, but there's a website that I use where you can leave a voice message. I've been playing those over the last number of weeks, and it's great. This is our show, everybody. Let's talk about Formula One the way that we want to talk about it, in our own way, and we can do that. Anyways, it is now getting close to midnight. I'm tired. I want to go to sleep, so let's wrap it up for there. Enjoy the race, enjoy qualifying, and we'll be back in a couple of days to wrap it all up. And until then, have a great weekend, everyone. Bye for now.